Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, happy new year. It's the KNC Masterpiece here on 105.3 The Fan. Once again, I'm Will Chambers in with Mike Bassick, Alec Medford, Carter Freeman. Coordinate your video. You can check us out on YouTube and twitch.tv/DallasFanCam.
I'm excited. Happy new year. I'm excited and shocked because we're talking college football here.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this. I was whispering to Bobby as you're talking about your dating life and if you're getting married or not in your lifetime.
The eternal mystery for my parents and family.
I'm starting it off with this. We're talking college football. I am shocked because at 12:40, we're going to talk about betting in football.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon's an underdog?
Yeah.
What?
Hey, because
how is the number one seed that didn't lose a game, how are they an underdog in the bowl game?
Well, keep in mind, too, that lines can move a lot because of money that comes in. And not necessarily from the sharps.
Eddie George bet $1 billion on Ohio State?
When you see late movement on a line, which is, well, pretty much like starting right now on either the game tonight or the game tomorrow, those are the sharps that are betting. They're putting their money on it. Whereas you have a recency bias coming off of the last times that we just saw these two teams on the field and being it more recent with Ohio State.
Yeah, looking horrible against Michigan. An average college football team.
Right. And then looking great against Tennessee. Yeah. We expect more of the great from Ohio State because of the roster, the pedigree, like where they were ranked from the beginning of the year. And so we feel as a public more like that's really the more Ohio State team.
Is that how you feel about it?
I honestly, do you remember a couple years ago?
When it said OSU, I was like, Oregon's not OSU, are they? I was like, that's Oregon State. So I was just, I'm shocked going into this show that Oregon is an underdog tomorrow.
Since I watched Ohio State play Tennessee, I've been leaning Ohio State, and then I lean, and then I'll talk myself a little bit into Oregon because I'll say, don't let the internal bias and all that kind of stuff. A couple of years ago, CJ Stroud and Ohio State against Georgia and Stetson Bennett. It's one of the best college football games I've ever seen.
Yeah, when I thought C.J. Stroud should be the first overall pick.
Ditto. And yeah, like, you and I were in the same boat together
on
that. I'm
stupid. I'm not going to watch hours of film. Like, Broadus is, I don't know who Broadus had one or two in that quarterback debate.
Yeah.
He literally puts in the work, the time, the effort to watch almost all he can watch of these guys to make a real evaluation. I'm one of those stupid fans who watch one bowl game and go, I think C.J. Stroud's the best quarterback.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about it.
I watched Paxton Lynch that one year in the Fart Knocker Bowl.
Yeah.
And
those are two different things that I think.
And I was like, Paxton Lynch is horrible.
Yeah.
And I know it was just a bowl game, right?
Just
and
a regular bowl game. It's hard
picked,
to.
In the first round, the Cowboys really wanted him, were shocked and disappointed they didn't get him. But I was just watching that one bowl game go, I was sitting next to Kavanaugh, who loves the draft or loved the draft both. And I was like, he's horrible. And it was like, it's just one game. It's just a bowl game. Maybe he's not into it, whatever. It's like, yeah,
probably because
he wasn't into the NFL either.
No doubt.
Okay.
Was in and out of it. No, I agree. I mean, I've been saying this for months now, and I think we talked a little bit about it yesterday, that in order to get to the party, you have got to have a great defense. And that year, Georgia had the best defense. I mean, all those guys are in the NFL pretty much. And most of them playing for Philadelphia. But you still, that's to get to the party. You have to have the offense in order to win the national championship, to get you over the hump, to beat those good defenses. And C.J. Stroud was incredible. Marvin Harrison Jr. goes down in the first half of that game. Think of the first half, but if he doesn't get hurt, I think Ohio State probably pulls that out.
Okay.
But Ohio State's up 14 in the third quarter. Might have even gotten into the fourth quarter where they were up 14. But bottom line, Stetson Bennett played outstanding football to come back, and it was like 42-41.
He is a veteran. He was 30 years old playing quarterback, so he wasn't going to be shocked by the moment as a kid because he was a grown adult who probably had three kids.
Absolutely. By the way, the most, I have to look up his name in full, but that was like the most SEC quarterback name you could ever, like Stetson Eugene Bennett III or something, but it was even more so.
Okay.
But I'll say this. That's the kind of game that I'm expecting with Ohio State and Oregon. Okay. And that at that point, it's pick 'em.
Okay.
I lean Ohio State now.
I like this because I want to bet on these games. I'm interested in tonight's game. I'm going to be at home by 6 o'clock. Kickoff, I believe, is 6:30. So I am excited about this game. I am shocked that this game is an 11.5-point spread for Penn State. I do think Penn State is going to win. I am an amateur when it comes to all this. I know you and Carter are experts, but I want to have some fun on these games. And I will take the 11.5 points and Boise State, but they're not going to win.
I think two of these games are going to be very close. I think two are not going to be close.
And I'm excited tonight because I also think there's a great chance the Cowboys fall in love with Aston Jeanty. Not that they're going to trade up, but if he's there with that pick, I do think Jeanty will be the pick for the Cowboys.
And I'm curious to where everybody stands on that. 877-881-1053. Hit us up on the Frankel and Frankel Injury Attorneys fan text because, you know, much like a debate happens on this station with Eric Chiafalo, and I'll say RJ is on his side, and then I don't know if anybody else is on the opposite side, but they are pretty much anti-spending a lot or giving up a lot, like a first-round draft pick on a running back, you know, like kind of devaluing the position. How much of that has changed in what we have seen in the NFL this year? I mean, the difference maker has been Saquon Barkley for Philadelphia. I mean, you look at Detroit, they've been sensational all year with balance on offense and even balance at that position with Montgomery and Gibbs, even though Montgomery is out now. You really do need both there. So if you were an anti-running back, first-round guy, has what you've seen in the NFL this year changed? Being like, no, I think that they need to go get Aston Jeanty. And that will that create interest for you to watch him tonight?
Yes, I am very interested in this game, partially because Aston Jeanty, I think, is going to be around the Cowboys pick, somewhere between 10 and 15, it looks like, is where the Cowboys are going to pick. And I think Jeanty will be picked around that pick. I just don't think the rookie scale is that big of a deal. I just pulled it up. Now, it says the 2025 rookie scale. The 10th overall pick could get $23.3 million on their four-year deal. The 15th pick gets $18.1 million on their four-year deal. That's not paying a running back a lot of money. Mm-mm. It's not paying them. I think if I'm looking at, hey, do I want to take a running back? Do I want to take Aston Jeanty with the number one overall pick? Well, that's $42.2 million.
But
that's
the 4 years. Right. The argument in this case is not about the money. Yeah. The argument is you can get a running back in the third round or the fifth round. Was Isaiah Pacheco?
And I get, you know, to your point, that is in the first year, less than $1 million. That's awesome. And in year one, it says the 10th pick gets $4.2 million and the 15th pick gets $3.3 million. Yeah. I'm just giving
you want to get the most value you can everywhere, right? We always want to have that. So that's where you're wasting first round asset or, you know, talent there at another position where you could get somebody that is very talented that could do the things that you need later on.
All right, let me ask you this. This is a question that doesn't really have a easy answer. If Boise State wins the game and Aston Jeanty has 30 carries for 230 yards tonight, does that change his draft status that he beat Penn State?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, no, it's the manner in which he beats Penn State.
Right, yeah.
You're going to go up against that defense.
I'm giving you like 200 yards or more rushing where he's averaging 5 or more yards per carry.
Yeah.
Does that change that Jenty is now not going to be available at pick 12 or 14 because he just pushed himself into, I'll say, Bijan Robinson status, where he goes somewhere between 5 and 8?
Mel Kiper Jr., I saw this yesterday, had ranked all the, I don't know exactly how many years he goes back, but modern era, recent picks, you know, at running back,
okay,
the top ones. He has Jenty at number 6. Saquon was number 1. McCaffrey was ahead of him. Bijan was ahead of him. But he's got Jenty at 6.
Okay.
I think that would change, I mean, in response to what you're really asking,
okay,
if he is to do that tonight. Now,
if you're a Cowboy fan and you really want him, do you want Boise State to lose by 20 and he has 21 carries for 83 yards? Does that change that he won't be a top 10 pick if he doesn't rush for 100 tonight?
Look, at the end of the day, you have Boise State's schedule. You know, I complain all the time. We talked about it yesterday on why I felt SMU and Indiana were deserved to be in the college football playoff and Alabama not and all that. That being said, when you're trying to evaluate, you know, how they play, I do look at them in the games in which they had tough competition. And oh, by the way, Jenty was really good. He was great against Oregon. But it is still the Mountain West.
Okay.
And I'd like to see how does he go, because Penn State has a really good defense. Now, you know, we'll talk a little bit more like this, you know, with Carter in hour 4 at 120, but they're 45th in rushing success rate. That is how frequently an opposition gains 50% of necessary yardage on first down, 70% on second, 100% on third or fourth. This is Penn State's defense. So they're 45th, which isn't, you know, it's not great.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, they're a good football team. And they play in a Big Ten. So if Ashton Jenty does struggle tonight against that, then, yeah, I'm going to be like, I don't know. I wouldn't waste a first. You know, he'll probably be gone in the first round. So maybe I'm looking elsewhere, especially if you're drafting in the top 15. That would be me personally, and I think that's how other, you know, others would look at it.
Yeah, okay, so now that you said this, and this will get into Mike Likes It a little bit, but I would like to bet you
$20,
and I will take Boise State +11.5.
I'll give the 11.5.
Okay, so.
Yeah.
And you have Venmo?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we can.
All right, so.
We'll be able to settle.
Okay, good. So this gives me a little bit more on the game tonight. Now I'm a little bit more interested in it because I have $20 on +11.5 Boise State. And I think Penn State's going to win.
Yeah.
I just like having 11.5 points.
I'll explain when we get back into college football later on why I like Penn State to win and to cover. And the other team, I expect to cover very, very safely. But there are two games that I'm having a hard time with.
I want to bet all 4 games.
Okay. All right. We'll do that for sure.
Now, there could be a game where I'm like, no, I love this and you love it too and I don't want to do it. But I have a good feeling. I'm such a bad bettor, like most human beings. That's why there is Las Vegas.
That's why it looks so beautiful.
Is that if you do really like a game, I'd be like, I don't care. At least it gives me juice on this. And all it is $20. I can survive losing. Like, I could lose up to $80. If you go 4 for 4 in this, fine. I lost $80. Most likely, I'm not against you, Will, but most likely you're not going to go 4 for 4 in these games.
Yeah, they typically don't. That's why, you know, the parlays are really hard to hit.
Maybe I lose $40, but I had fun because I am really excited about tonight.
Tomorrow, had a pretty good year, by the way. I think I'm batting around 60% or so in college football.
We're going to put up Christmas stuff tomorrow for New Year's. Like, we're going to make sure our house is like done with Christmas. So when we get back from Mexico, I'm taking a little trip to Mexico with the family.
To take anything down.
Everything is done in the house. The house is just like, okay, yeah, we don't have to do any chores for the most part when we get back. So tomorrow from noon to, like, let's say 11 p.m., I'm going to be pretty college football heavy, and it will help out that I have $20 on these games.
It's going to be fun, too. There's nothing like the Rose Bowl, the atmosphere, the time it's played every year. I don't understand why that is not. our national championship every single year.
It's a real Rose Bowl game, too. It's a Pac-12 and Big Ten, whatever you want to call it.
I just got goosebumps right now thinking about how good that game is going to be in the venue, in the setting, all of it.
Tomorrow you have no plans except watching college football?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Doing actually the same. I'll be taking down the all the Christmas stuff.
Okay.
Love it. Cannot wait. All right. Just getting started here in the KNC Masterpiece here on 105.3 The Fan. Will Chambers in for, well, I'm here with Mike Bassick, so you can pick if I'm in for Kevin or for Corey. AM on the FM next hour at 11:20 with Alec Metford. We also have a Cowboys ticket giveaway that could be right around the corner for some tickets, thanks to our friends at Miller Lite. We will talk about the Mavs coming up a little bit later. They lost last night, but they were, pretty much a mash unit, or with some guys that were out on suspension. But we're going to get into what the depth means for this team, especially if Luka is going to be out for a considerable period of time. It's possible. We'll do that in the expressway up in hour three. But Mike, ask all the football questions. That's next in the KNC Masterpiece.
Mike, if Dak is a difference maker, what difference does he make? That'll be question one coming up next.
Will Chambers in with Mike Bassick today, the KNC Masterpiece. And of course, Alec Metford, who will give us a AM on the FM about an hour from now. Carter Freeman's coordinating your video, so check us out on our YouTube channel and twitch.tv/DallasFanCam. Now time for Mike Asks All the Football Questions.
All right, so this is going to be about what difference do these guys make for the Cowboys? And I'll see if we can get into any other players. But I thought about this on Friday, Saturday. So it wasn't like because Dak is playing right now, and it was before the Philadelphia blowout game. But Dak Prescott is paid like a difference maker. The Cowboys will tell you he's a difference maker. So my question is, if Dak is a difference maker, and Alec, I want you to chime in here too after Will, what difference does Dak make? I get he's better than Cooper Rush. I'm not trying to do any of that. But if Dak is a difference maker in the NFL and on an NFL team, what difference does Dak make?
Dak, it is so difficult with Dak Prescott, right? I can't recall, or I've asked this over the years, and I don't know if I have seen such a departure from what we have in a regular season quarterback than what we have in a postseason quarterback. Because he is a legitimate, or was last year, a legitimate MVP candidate, right? He was sensational. We've seen him at points in his career breaking NFL records. And yet, when it comes to the playoffs, we've seen him not match the moment, as we were just talking about in regards to some of these CFP teams, in that first weekend. I don't know what it is. So it's abstract. It's so hard. Like, as far as a difference maker on our team, I think that he's a really good quarterback. I think he processes information well, being, what is he now, nine years now in the league?
2016 was his rookie year.
So I think he plays the quarterback position very well. I think the ultimate question is going to be, is this a guy you think makes the difference in making your team a Super Bowl winner or, Super Bowl participant? And I'm sorry, I don't believe that because of all the evidence I've seen in the past 4 years in the playoffs.
Okay, so let me ask it another way. Instead of if Dak is a difference maker, what difference does he make? Is if I ask it this, Dak Prescott, out of all the NFL quarterbacks, is top three, and I know that's a very small window, he's top three in this. Like, he's as good as Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or you name it, Joe Burrow. He is as good or better than these guys at what? In a specific thing. Is it reading a defense? Is it a two-minute drill? Is it, like, obviously he can't run anymore. He's one of the most unathletic quarterbacks now in the NFL.
No, so it's one thing and one thing only. And that's having the belief of, your teammates and the galvanizing effect that you can have.
Leadership quality, yeah, is possibly top three.
That's it.
Okay.
There's somebody sitting down close to us that probably thinks very differently on that.
Well, and I don't mind Bobby chiming in here because he is. I'm not saying it's not. It's bad to love Dak. Dak is an. I think a great.
I think it's such a difficult conversation.
I don't know him as a person, but it seems like he's a great person, right? So sometimes we like saying this person's great or this. I don't know. Like maybe behind the scenes he's not, but I do think from what we hear, Dak is a great leader and a great teammate. And maybe that is what you could say. That's his difference. That's how he is a difference maker. But if I ask you, Bobby, people say Dak Prescott is a difference maker. What difference does he make?
So I think where you, if you're to identify where is he near the top of the league, like you're asking about, I think universally, whenever you talk to people around the league and say, what does he do that's really different or where he's better than most quarterbacks, they will tell you that it's pre-snap diagnosis, identifying what the defense is in, what they're trying to disguise.
That's probably a better, that's better than what I said as far as the information in front of him, because that's been not his best at times, but pre-snap definitely.
There was a, I don't want to out who, but like there was last year, for instance, they were meeting with somebody, meeting with a college player leading up to the draft, and I had had a couple discussions with this individual, and they had mentioned that when they went and they were talking to Brian Schottenheimer and they had asked him, you know, well, what's Dak Prescott like? You know, what would that be like playing with him? And that Schottenheimer had told him that, look, if you want to be in the exact right position and in the exact right play on any given snap, you want to play with Dak. And he's like, Dak's the best I've ever seen at getting us into the right play, getting us in against the right look. So that's one. Two, I think people think, again, there's such nuanced traits, but it's eye discipline. It's the way that he moves the safeties with his eyes.
Okay.
It's the the progression.
Like
those
answer.
Are the kind of things.
Yeah, I'm not here to bash Dak, but I think that it's a good question. He is obviously paid as a difference maker. We're hoping that he is a difference maker in the biggest moments. And so now watch how easy this one gets. If Micah Parsons is a difference maker, what difference does he make?
Not as much of one. Look, I think that I think Micah can be the most disruptive player in the league on defense. He just isn't all the time. And then the second half of years, we don't see it a lot. Now, to be fair, offenses are like, he's a problem. We got to have two. He's got to get double team and chipped. He's probably tired out throughout the, even though he's in tremendous shape. When you're getting double and triple teamed all year long, it's going to make it difficult, one, to, you know, to be ultimately successful and that disruptive. And then two, especially in the last half, you know, of the years. But the fact is what it is. You know, I mean, the last half of last year, you just didn't see a whole lot, you know, stat wise. But you can say when you watch the tape, well, he matters because of how much of an offense he takes up.
Okay. I think he's a difference maker because of how quick he can get to the quarterback, and I would say arguably he's the fastest at getting to the quarterback at times. Like, he is, to me, we saw how crappy this defense was, and I understand.
Yeah.
There were different things going on, but we saw when he came back from injury, this defense went from being pretty crappy to pretty good. Not great, but pretty good. And so he's a difference maker, as he can take a bunch of crap, because we saw how crappy this thing was, and he came back, and all of a sudden this was a pretty good defense. So, Bobby, if Parsons is a difference maker, what difference does he make?
Yeah, I think there's no player on defense for them that impacts the way a team game plans more than Micah. Because Micah, just as a small example, teams talk all the time about, we've got to send double teams over here, or we've got to have a chip. We've got to have the running back chip over. So let's say you're going against San Francisco, okay, as an example. You've got Micah out there, and Kyle Shanahan says, we cannot have Micah Parsons beat us. So what we're going to need is couple different times, George Kittle, you're staying in to double team block Micah Parsons. Christian McCaffrey, on this pass play, you're going out and you're chipping him. And so you're talking about, if you can take 6, 7, 8 plays, however many plays it is throughout the game, especially on third down situations, which are going to be third and long, and you're taking away Christian McCaffrey from the route progression or George Kittle from the progression because they have to commit resources to just making sure he doesn't blow the play up. That's something where even if he doesn't make a play, it so alters the way that they want to attack things in big moments that I think he completely alters the way teams game plan for Dallas.
And I think, to me, that's an easy one. We can see how much of a difference maker Micah Parsons is. Not every play, but at times that He's a difference maker. Now, the next one I think is a pretty easy one, too. I just want to know your specifics on what makes him a difference maker. If CeeDee Lamb is a difference maker, what difference does he make?
I think, to me, he's the ultimate difference maker on the team, on the whole team. He can do so much. He can do it on the perimeter, but he really excels in the middle of the field. He's gotten bigger or stronger, and I think Bobby would back this up, that there's nobody tougher than he is. He's an ultimate, he's a premier talent. I know when we talk wide receiver throughout the league, a lot of it, you know, you go Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson are at the top, and rightfully so. I honestly put CeeDee Lamb, you know, right there, right behind him or up there with him.
Okay. What would you say specifically, Bobby, on what makes CeeDee Lamb a difference maker in the NFL?
I think it's funny because, like, when you mention Dak and you say, what difference does he make? Like what traits are there? What do you look at and say the top trait? If I even ask people that with CD, I think a lot of people would go, I mean, he's not like super fast. He's not super strong where he's breaking a bunch of tackles. He doesn't do a bunch of that.
Well, yeah, he's always been so thin, too.
And then Aikman earlier this year said, not running great routes. So it's like, okay, yeah. Well, what does CD do? I think a lot of CD stuff is body control, hands. There's a lot of subtleties in his routes to get separation. I think he's very laterally explosive. That helps on in-breaking routes for him to get open. But I think, honestly, the biggest difference that he makes is, regardless of what scheme you're drawing up or what your game plan is or how much you struggled or who your quarterback is, if you need a conversion, if you need a touchdown, you've got a good shot with CeeDee Lamb at any given moment. So he will extend drives. He will end games for you. And it doesn't matter how limited you are as a play caller or quarterback or whatever else, CD can help you overcome that and make a difference.
I think the body control is a really underrated, or probably not by those who actually analyze in scouting departments, but for what gets talked about, like with people like us, it's way underrated, because that to me is how you get yards after the catch. You know, if you're one of the, like, used to hate it when somebody would like jump up for the ball, like when they didn't need to, like, keep your feet on the ground, keep running. Like, all that does is slow you down and you're going to get tackled. His body control and how he catches the football, no matter where it is, a lot of times enables him to, you know, keep moving forward and gain more yards.
So my next one isn't a Dallas Cowboy. This is going to be interesting with Bobby, because I know that, I'm not saying you think this person is, but you think this team somewhat is. And I think this is a big debate around the NFL. But he's to me the best player in the NFL and one of the greatest players in the history of the NFL with a lot more prime left. If Patrick Mahomes is a difference maker in 2024, what difference does he make?
Oh, this is so easy for me. His legs. And I don't mean how fast like he is, and he's obviously hindered. It's how often have we seen, especially this year, him steal a first down or end up enabling his offense and his team to win a game by just suffocating the other one by driving out the game, right? Finishing with a field goal or finishing, you know, sitting on the ball. We know what he does, you know, his arm talent, incredible. He's so much of a smarter quarterback now as it happens. So as you play longer, you go on. But to me, like, the biggest thing that he does right now is doing what I just said with his legs.
I mean, I troll about the Mahomes thing. It's mainly I don't like the Chiefs right now and their fraudulent record.
Mahomes, I think they get bounced in the division.
Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL because Mahomes, the ability to, there's no such thing as a bad throw from Mahomes. Like, there's no position you can get him in to where he's, if he's off platform or he's falling off to his side or he's rolling out or you've got pressure in his face, he's got the arm strength to be able to deliver the ball without a problem. He's got the quick release mechanics to get it out in a hurry. It's something where off platform, on platform,
improvisation,
regardless of what it is, he is incredibly accurate.
It's so hard to get him off the field, especially at the end of games. Because of what all those things he just said. I mean, how we saw last week that flick with the left hand, you know, to get a first down. I mean, you got to be like, if you're a defensive corner, like, what the?
There is no amount of a pass rush that can disrupt the way he plays. Yeah. That's incredibly rare.
And we're out of time here, and that's how quick Mike asked all the football questions.
I like it. I like it.
Because we'll do this a little bit more maybe later in the show. Because we got some more questions. Questions, but it's going to be interesting because I don't want you guys to talk on this because we got to get to baseball nuggets. Always get shortened anyways. Is I can't vote Patrick Mahomes less than third in the MVP. I think Josh Allen is going to be the MVP. I think Saquon Barkley is going to finish second. I think it's going to be a very close race. But Mahomes has one loss, and the only loss he has to is the guy who's going to win the MVP. I get Lamar Jackson season. I get some other people like Joe Burrow and his numbers. But the dude went 15-1, and the only loss he has is a somewhat close loss where everybody watching that game thought, if Buffalo kicks a field goal here, they're going to lose. And they luckily scored. Josh Allen had an awesome run and scored a touchdown.
There's so much on that, so much meat on that bone. Sean McDermott, what a playoffs it is in front of Sean McDermott. All right, thank you, Bobby. Thanks for popping in with us.
Last time I had to give him $5 to do this. I didn't even.
Now I do it for free.
Yeah. He and Broadus with the 8,000 jobs. Okay, coming up at the top of next hour, we'll talk with Mickey Spagnuolo and then AM on the FM. But of course, next here in the KNC Masterpiece, Baseball Nuggets.
And Will changed his mind. About 3 years ago, Will told me how much he hates baseball. He doesn't hate it anymore. Why? Next.
An hour from now, some gridiron gravy. The decision with Saquon Barkley being mulled by Nick Sirianni. Apparently going to consult his players as well as the Philadelphia brass on that, as well as the coaching candidates that are taking interviews. All an hour from now here in the KNC Masterpiece of 105.3 The Fan. Will Chambers in with Mike Bassick, Alec Medford, and Carter Freeman back there coordinating your videos. You can watch on YouTube as well as Twitch. Okay, let's do it. Let's get into some baseball nuggets.
All right, real quick, sad news. If you're a longtime Texas Ranger fan, Lenny Randle, former Texas Ranger infielder, passed away yesterday. I just texted my father because I know that they were buddies and teammates on the Texas Rangers. I didn't know that till right before we did this segment. So condolences to Lenny Randle's family as he dies at 75 years old. Now, I want to get into this, Will. Is a few years ago, and I can't remember what year, you're gonna kind of lead baseball nuggets here, because I found it interesting listening to you on the weekend or when you fill in, you used to really dislike baseball, and we'd have discussions about it a few years ago.
Well, I loved baseball. Up until getting into like the 2020s.
Okay.
Like 2018, 19, it started really shifting.
Recently, I've heard you say, hey, I'm enjoying baseball again. So I'd love to for you to kind of give the story on how you loved baseball, then really disliked it, stopped watching it, and now you seem to be watching it more.
Because I felt like we lost the game of what it was. That any critic of baseball will say the same things, right? It's always the same, right? Like, it's slow, it's boring, you know, it's, you know, all the things that kind of go like around that. Well, the thing baseball fans love the most, if you're like a, you know, baseball nerd or a seam head, is the strategy behind the game, because it is one of the most strategic, if not the most strategic, at least of all the major sports, right? Based on the things that you could do, the manipulations that you would have, but that all went away over the course of a decade, or really probably a lot longer, but still more hardcore into the analytics when it came to launch angle.
Yeah.
And when it came to, you know, speed, miles per hour from your pitcher, where we got to the place where it was just nothing but home runs, walks, and strikeouts. And much like we were talking yesterday about the three-point line, right?
Yeah. Isn't it interesting? The analytic people, and they are smart people,
yeah,
came into sports and said, just do this all of the time, which mathematically does make sense.
It works out.
But it's not really fun to watch.
No. And that's where you go, well, okay, I remember a few years ago, this is when I had gotten my peak, where I was like, I'm done. We had a fan outing out at the ballpark. Actually, I think it was just like the company thing, right?
Old ballpark?
New ballpark.
The new one, okay. So 2021, because 20, nobody was allowed
right,
to go 21, to
21, maybe 22. And we're up there, and I'm down watching the game. And there was, I want to say, one or two outs. The bottom line is that there was a shift deployed. Or no, there was no shift deployed to a hitter. And then once they got to two strikes, they actually went into the shift.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? That doesn't make any sense. And so I texted you and Jared. And I think I talked about it with Jared at length, and he was just like, yeah, they'd still look at it analytically that it doesn't matter. You still want to pull the ball there, even though you can get, you know, with two strikes, it always been choke up, just try to make contact, get the ball in play, and maybe you end up on first base. No, it completely gone away from that. What I wanted was more action on the field. So years ago, we used to have Tim Kirchen on every week. And I said one day, I go, Tim, you could tell me how crazy I am by this idea. But what if we moved all the fences back? We moved the bases back, not a ton, but a little bit. And we moved the mound back a little bit. And here's the reason why. I feel like that we have, I want more space out in the diamond. More space for the ball to fall in, thusly creating more running of the bases. You know, because, you know, that's action, right? I love first to third. I love the strategy of having a player that I know that is hitting second that could get Juan Pierre from first to third. Somebody who makes contact
Luis
and maybe
Castillo.
Is really good going opposite field, right? Yeah, you know what I mean? That's what I loved about baseball.
Yeah.
Moving players, right? How important it is, how much pressure you can put on a pitcher, especially in the postseason when you have got to be able to, or you used to, have to have the ability to manufacture runs to win. Because if you are reliant on the home run ball and all of a sudden you're not hitting home runs a la the 2008 Chicago Cubs, you're not winning anything. You can't do it. That's the way that baseball used to be. And it went so far away from that that I'm like, you know, what is this anymore? And Tim went, yeah, Will, you are crazy. But, you know, as it turns out, that's a little bit of what, you know, we're seeing now. And it's not that I wanted it easier on the hitters by moving the mound back. What I thought was the closer you have forces together, the greater the impact when that force happens, right? So, you know, a 95-mile-per-hour pitch and then the impact with the bat, the closer it is, the harder the impact. Just by moving it back a little bit, deadens that impact a little bit, putting the ball in play more. That was my, you know, that was why I came up with those ideas.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to see more in baseball. I wanted to see more managers managing, doing things in order to manufacture runs, to create pressure. Like, to me, the golden age of baseball was in the late 90s into the, you know, through the 2010s. And it's not because, you know, I'm not a Yankees fan or anything like that, but
yeah.
You had these rivalries. You had these, you know, gritty players like a Dave Roberts that was used in the manner he was with the Red Sox in order to beat, you know, on that epic comeback. So, really, that was the genesis of what led me astray. And then these new rules coming back. The pitch clock, to me, fine. I like the fact that the games are a little bit shortened, but that's not it at all. What I wanted. What I wanted was more action. You got more stolen bases. You got more base hits. You got more runners being moved all around. That's what I love the most.
So I've talked to multiple people in the sport. Thank you for not kissing me on the head like you just did, Will. Is the analytic side will always be there. They're very smart people on the analytic side, giving you as much information as possible. In fact, too much information, but that's their job is go through all these numbers and give us more information than we could ever contemplate as a manager, as a staff, as a player. But from what I understand is over the last 2 or 3 years, as the rules have changed a little bit and they've seen at times the lack of success just having an analytic team. We're just going to go with the percentages every time. You find out that, hey, this pitch is good. Why not, instead of throwing it 30% of the time, why don't you throw it 50% of the time? Right. And then it loses its effectiveness. So they have found out that analytics are good, but not only were they possibly ruining the sport for people like Will Chambers, but they weren't as fail-proof as they thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of teams now are not
like it is with the 3-point
analytics
shot.
But they're like, what if it works at 30%? Maybe we just up it 5%. We don't try to double the percentage of it, because its effectiveness is effective because it's only used 30% of the time. If we try to use it 50% of the time, how much do we lose its effectiveness, type of deal. So I'm just giving you an example, but I think the analytic part that is a very smart part, which kind of maybe got fans to be like, I don't enjoy this anymore as just hit a home run. Who cares if you strike out?
Right.
Now they're seeing the negative effects of just playing an analytic game, not only from the fans' perspective, but from the team's perspective of like, it actually doesn't work the way we thought it would work. Teams are going away from some of the analytics and getting back to, what do you see? What are we seeing in this game? How are we hitting the last 3 days?
Yeah.
If, yes, overall, Corey Seager's going to probably get his 30 to, I'm hoping, if he stays healthy, he's a 40 home run guy.
Right.
But like, hey, if he's struggling right now offensively, he's going to get out of it. But let's not just try to smack the ball pull side over the fence. If you get a ball, you know, pitched middle away, shoot
the
ball
other way.
Hard into the gap
no
and let's
doubt.
Get a double. Because
that's exactly what I'm talking about.
I grew up, you said 90s, 2000s, but I grew up with some of the best players in the game being Don Mattingly, Wade Boggs, Tony Gwynn, Cal Ripken Jr. These guys that would, batting average was so huge. It's funny to go back.
Also, with that, who's the biggest guy in the league at that time?
The biggest guy in like the 80s?
Not, I mean, Jose Canseco, right?
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
During that 80s. Time, which I totally agree with, now... And obviously steroid, but there's like four or five of those guys on your roster. Everybody's, you know, big and jack now. So that's, you know.
And that's what made them so different, right? Ricky Henderson, Mark McGwire, Jose Canseco, Dave Henderson. They had so many big boppers in their lineup. And then they had the guys that did their jobs of Carney Lanford and Walt Weiss and guys
Willie
that
McGee.
Would get on base. Tony Phillips, I think, might have been on that team. So like guys that would get on base, stuff like that. So I'm glad that I think the sport is doing some things to get people back to the game that used to really like the game. And I'm not, if it gets into, we don't have any more time, but the golden at bat thing, if you said you like that, I was going to punch you in the face.
No, no, I appreciate more ideas.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not going to just trash it, but. You know, I still think that I'm not a fan of the second, you know, the runner on second in extra innings.
Yeah.
You want to do that in the 15th inning. I'm like, okay, I'm down for that. But in the 10th, come on. I'm glad they're not doing that in the playoffs.
All right. So there's baseball nuggets. Will Chambers back
I'm
with
back,
baseball.
Baby. I'm back.
But still,
I love it.
Like, I'm done. But Luis Castillo, Luis Arraez.
Yeah.
He's now San Diego's trying to move him. It does show Luis Arraez, if you look at his numbers, very similar to Ichiro, Tony Gwynn, Wade Boggs. So we do have a person who is like Rod Carew. He is in the game
today. And defense,
today.
Too. You know, I mean, the importance of defense.
He's struggled. That's why they have to.
Well, not with him, but first. I just mean in general, because if you're putting the ball in play more, then defense has to matter more.
Yeah, but it is interesting. There is a guy hitting like those guys, and he keeps getting traded every year because teams kind of want him, but then kind of don't want him. So I don't know what would happen in today's game if you had Tony Gwynn and Wade Boggs and stuff, because we do have him. He does make an all-star team here and there, but teams end up not
wanting
these single guys.
It's wild. All right. Great stuff. I love it. And I love being back in the baseball because once it, you know, was going away, I'm like, we're never getting it back.
86 days away from Rangers opening day.
Let's go. Let's go. And more Ellie De La Cruz, too. That's my favorite player right now. He's just incredible. All right. Let's hit an hour or two. Talk back with the Cowboys with Mickey Spagnola next here on The Fan.